We know you're always on the lookout for cutting-edge insights, and ThwyCamp 2024, hosted by SolarWinds, has got you covered. Join us for our 11th annual free virtual event, April 17th and 18th, for 2 days of digital IT learning, expert insights, and awesome giveaways. Trust us, you wouldn't want to miss this. Welcome to SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm your host, Crystal Taylor, and with me, as always, is my co-host, John Sebring. Today, we thought we'd take the time to talk about an evergreen tech industry topic. Whether you're currently in the job market looking for a new position or just want to keep your options open, there are some fundamentally different experiences waiting out there in a new role. We're going to dive into the differences between working at a startup and working at an established corporation and help you ask yourself some important questions to decide where you fit. So we'll kick things off talking, you know, a good topic to start with is risk versus reward. Like they are very, very different experiences. I have worked at both a startup and at an established corporation. We'll start on the startup side. Some of the risks associated, I think, with working at a startup are benefits. For instance, you may not have benefits right away, or they might not be benefits you'd like to have right away, right? They're still, you know, figuring things out, getting funding, all of that stuff. You can certainly miss out. When I started at a startup, we didn't have 401k, for instance. And so it was like a year in before we established a 401k. And that was fine for me because I was like 23 or 24. So like, sure, whatever. I don't care about 401k, but you know, your experience may differ.
Yeah, no, I totally see where you're coming from and agree. Like the financial stability for you as an individual is a risk because obviously an established corporation shows proof that they will continue and they have the funding to say, we have continued to provide these benefits for X amount of time. And I think that some startups are getting better at having some benefits earlier on as part of their funding, right? Because part of the startup is they need funding from the founders, from donors, right? And, you know, depending on how that works, they may factor in that they need funding for those benefits just to make it more of an incentive. But still, it's not as secure feeling as an established corporation. But yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense that it's a, you know, you mentioned your age. So there's a lot of factors that come with being younger where the risk is more acceptable, right? You've got a higher appetite for it. And as we go down, there's a through kind of our list of topics here, there's even more that will play into those risks and then even the rewards that will come with it for, you know, kind of having less outside of work responsibility so that you can accept more of that risk. But I don't want to go too far ahead of it. But yeah, I totally echo everything you said there.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's like a reward, I guess, for working in a startup is oftentimes opportunities for working more on the bleeding edge, right? Being a bit more forward thinking. There's not as much red tape to get through to get a new policy in place, for instance, or like, I want to go try to do this type of work. Oftentimes, there's a lot more opportunity there for you to get more experience doing a variety of different things. And of course, the risk that comes with that, the other side of that coin is that means that you may be working a lot of hours and you may be what they say, wearing many hats, where you have a lot of responsibilities kind of across the board. In an established corporation, oftentimes you have one job and that is your job and you have the roles and responsibilities that go with that. Whereas, you know, working at a startup, you may have to accept that you're going to have to do all kinds of other things, right? Like just because you went and learned something new doesn't mean you have to stop doing whatever you were doing before. Oftentimes you just keep adding to that and that can lead to burnout faster.
Yeah. And it's funny. I completely agree with that sentiment. But in the research I was doing, they talked about a benefit of startups is a more flexible schedule, more oftentimes remote, which the remote part, yes, absolutely 100% agreed on, because how are they going to compete in this market without offering one of the most popular benefits of any job right now, which is remote. But I 100% agree that I feel like in a startup, one of the risks you take, which could be something you're looking for, is more work, where you, in an established environment, have an incredibly structured role, hopefully, right, depending on the corporation, organization, but you have a very structured role that says stay in your lane almost, right? And I mean, those are things that all organizations and corporations should be trying to improve upon, right? Breaking down the siloed aspects of things and doing more knowledge share. But it's so much less of a rigid thing in a startup company because they need everybody doing everything almost, which means more hours, more responsibilities, the mini hats thing. Oh my gosh, couldn't agree more. And similarly to a startup, when a company is going through a big transformation, I see this happening too, right? Especially if it's a smaller company, so there's not as many roles. If they're going through a larger attempt at digital transformation, even if it's a slower process, right, as they bring in a new sweep of IT folks, you're going to have few heads, but there's a lot of roles and responsibilities to fill with that. So it's almost like a startup fill. But yeah, it's definitely something that's, I would say, both, right? It's a risk and a reward. It just depends on your appetite, right? And where your threshold for work-life balance is, really, because yeah, the exposure to those opportunities is something that folks in corporations would die for, right? They're like, oh man, I just really wish I would get a chance to do that, right? And it, again, from a risk perspective, is you may not be getting paid for the role you're in, but you get the exposure for it. Maybe you can throw it on your resume. And so the startup gives you that opportunity, and it's a really cool opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I think that that leads pretty nicely into one of the other things I wanted to talk about, which is policies. And the difference is, right, and when you work at a large corporation, they have established policies and programs and all of the things, right? You have a certain way of doing things, not to say that they can't ever be changed, but it takes a lot more effort and like responsibility taking in order to change policies. So, you know, maybe you're changing a role or you've added a new piece of software or something. So now you have to create new policies versus, I think at a startup, one of the things I found very frustrating many times is that there were no policies. And part of that is because they're establishing them as they go, you know, whether that is a policy for like, this is how we do this thing that we have to do all the time. And not even just like internal, like HR policies, or even if you have HR or outsourced HR, because oftentimes startups have outsourced HR. Another thing is like employment policies, but I'm not even talking about just employment policies. I'm talking about like work policies, right? The company I worked for provided services, so it was not a software company, but we did things a certain way, right? If we're going to go talk to a customer and we're going to do an assessment of their infrastructure and how it's set up and all of that, right? That we didn't have like a document to follow or established process or established policy to say, this is what we do when this happens, right? We had to figure all of that out. And a lot of that is good and bad, right? Because you get to have some say in what that is going to look like, what that process is going to be. And it's a bit easier to tweak it as you go. No one's just like laying down the hammer saying like, this is the way that it is. That really doesn't happen very much in my experience in that kind of startup culture, right? Where you're everybody's a bit more flexible on making changes as long as you're the one that's suggesting the change is willing to go through the effort, right? Because you have to, you can't just suggest
work. That extra hat on.
Yeah. You can't just suggest that something changes. You're like, oh, someone should do this additional work. It'll never happen. You have to be willing to do those things. And oftentimes they're very open to it, at least. Like, that's my experience is like, well, we need a policy for this, right? We're bringing new employees on. We're telling them, this is probably how you should do this. But like every different person might have a slightly different way of doing that thing. And if as you grow, then you might need to establish like, this is how we should be doing this thing because your customers start to get expectations mm-hmm. and you have to meet those. And that's not even, you know, not just customers, but employees as well, right? For internal policies.
Yeah. And customers is definitely a big thing that they would need to keep in mind. But I like what you said because you said good and bad when you were talking about the fact that a startup gets some capability of shaping what the policy should be, right? And I think one of the terms they use, which is a very common popular term, right? It's a buzzword, is agile, right? Mm-hmm. Startups are much more agile. Flexible is another synonym for that. But that agility is something that I think corporations are trying to strive for now because they're realizing that, hey, if we want to stay relevant, these startups are going to disrupt us if we can't also be agile. And so like the better corporations are trying to have some of that flexible, agile feel so that you can bring things up, right? A lot of disrupt projects, innovation projects, and saying, hey, try and see if you can give us an idea of, you know, what's going to make this better. And a cool analogy I have that's kind of like a startup, it was a college campus. It was just built, right? And so they built the campus, but they hadn't put in the walkways, footpaths, sidewalks. And so what they said was, let's actually not put them in yet. And what they did was they just let the campus be green and where they saw foot traffic, dirt trails, where people made decisions to say, this is the best path from A to B, right? And that's where they ended up building the sidewalks, right? They paved in where people were already walking. And so it's like, it gave the natural organic feel of, this is what makes sense. Now let's do it, right? It was a little bit more of an iterative approach, but it kind of had that same vibe of the people who walk the path get to help influence where the path is. So it is a really cool benefit to the startups, and, you know, encouragement to every corporation out there is allow some of that flexibility and innovation to come from the folks that are doing the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that it can be frustrating. Like I mentioned earlier, I found it incredibly frustrating, right? That there were no, so I was the reason a lot of policies got put in place because I was frustrated. So I would then make a policy or a process, and then that would become the policy or process. That's how I rose to the ranks as well, right? Like there's an opportunity there where you can show your worth and then get leveled up or whatever. You mentioned earlier, the opportunity for remote work is often a benefit of working at startups these days. And I think that that is true. Established corporations often have these big campuses or buildings that they've already spent money on. They've invested huge sums of monies in these things. And, you know, if they have a campus, there's all kinds of stuff. There's gyms and there's, you know, fitness centers and cafeterias and play areas and whatever. They've invested huge sums of money into these campuses. And so they're very often reluctant to offer the opportunity to be remote. And they certainly don't have like a remote first culture. And oftentimes I think that in a startup's case, they've realized that they don't have to take on those operating costs to start out with, right? Like an established corporation, they've already done the investment. But when you're establishing a new company, you can decide, oh, well, this remote work thing is a lot cheaper for us. So, you know, maybe we can do that. I mean, it also promotes like asynchronous working and that kind of stuff, which is important. Yeah, I find it very fascinating kind of watching corporations talk about remote work these days and how like against it they are. I do understand at the same time that I think that they need to realize they've got to catch up with the times. There's just, I think that it's becoming more common even at larger corporations to support hybrid, at least working, if not fully remote work. And I think it's only going to become more common. Our technology has advanced far enough that there's no reason we can't support it.
I 100% agree. Just from a, you know, thought leadership perspective, that it's proven that it's what people want and it can still work. So with those two arguments in mind, I don't see an argument that's going to sway it in the other direction, right? I think that, like you'd said, there's going to have to just be some acceptance that this is the way the world works now. And we'll see what happens, right? This is just the fun part about being able to observe, again, from a thought leadership perspective, observe what's going on out there. I guess the struggle for them is, how do we balance it? It's tough when you say, you know, X number of days in per week, because then it becomes so flexible, people may try and trick or abuse the system in ways, or it becomes so ambiguous, it's hard to monitor and track. So again, like you said, finding some kind of better policy, you know, there's 4 day a week work weeks for some organizations. And maybe that's an answer is, okay, well, these 4 days you're in and Friday's just always a work from home day, or maybe, you know, something similar to that. But having it so loose is almost not helpful, but you're right. There's no way they can't accept it. They've got to find a solution because it's, again, it's proven. It's what people want. People are happier and they've proven that they can do the work. And often, you know, selfishly, personally, I do like working in the office. I feel very productive when I am, but there's some work where I'm like, I feel like I just can't get this done because I'm in the office. People won't stop tapping me on the shoulder. I need quiet. Or for like these scenarios, unless they give me a recording studio, there's no way I could do this in the office. I have to be at home. I have to be in a place where I can lock myself in a room, keep it quiet, and do a recording.
Yeah, I used to say this all the time. I've worked from home for 13 years, and I find that I accomplish different work in office versus at home. I think that I have gotten used to the quiet and the ability to concentrate at home at the office, I get very distracted constantly. And I don't know if I have ADHD. I've never been diagnosed, but I find it very distracting. People walking by, you can hear people talking over there. And it's just like stuff is happening all the time. So being at home, I can sort of like tune everything out because there's nothing to tune out. I don't have to struggle to do that. And so I find I accomplish different work. Like there's a lot of like great collaboration that happens when I go to the office. I can visit with people. You can answer questions that they maybe think of on the spot that they don't want to send you over Teams because there's some weird culture going on with remote communications. And that is because we work for a company that was not always a remote, like supportive of remote, right? Like they're used to having everyone in the office. And so the culture hasn't quite caught up. And I think that's probably true for a lot of larger corporations. It's like, I previously worked at a remote first company and it was very different, I guess, communication happening there. Like where at an established corporation, they're not used to everyone that works there. That is, you know, they're used to working in the office. They're used to talking to people regularly. You know, those elevator conversations or hallway conversations, whatever you want to call them, that happen naturally.
The water cooler conversation.
Yeah. That happen naturally while you're in the office. And they're great. They prompt ideas and they prompt changes and better collaboration between different departments and things like that. They are really useful. And I feel like a lot of corporations haven't caught up to the idea that you can still do that remotely. People just aren't used to it. And so it, for some reason, it feels like more of a bother to like send a person a random message. I found this a lot that people don't just like, hey, I was thinking this thing and then send you a message. They don't do that. It's like they don't want to bother you.
I think it's the gamer in us though, Crystal. We're just used to, you know, DMing, you know,
yes.
PM me, you know, whisper me, whatever,
yeah.
Whatever the term for the game might be. Just, you know, shoot someone a direct message and, you know, hey, I had this idea. What do you think? Or, oh man, that thing happened to me again, right? You know, just recalling an experience. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. And when we're talking about the startups versus big corporations, one of the things, and you mentioned the word culture, and this plays into it, is the budget allocation for those kind of socialization things. And they're different. One might argue that larger corporations have more budget for it. But in my experience, having worked for larger corporations, there's less budget allocated for it. There's, you know, more often just a couple large events that are, you know, very, very much an expense for the organization. And they do pour a lot and it can be a high quality event. But what I find with when I was working for the smaller organization, the startup, that there was more frequent but less quote unquote high quality engagement, right? And the quality I'm saying is the venue, right? Because the quality of the engagement's up to the culture. So I think more frequent, and it doesn't have to be weekly or even monthly, but like doing a quarterly, all right, team get together of some kind, giving opportunities for folks to come together and create those water cooler conversations, even in the remote experience. Or if we're in the office and just don't bump into each other often. I think those kind of meetups for employees to be allowed to focus on just talking to one another and innovate. Because if it does happen on accident, that's a really lucky spark that happened. Because a lot of times I was on my way back to do something and I'm too distracted to stop and chat with you. So if you provide them the avenue to say, let's just mingle and talk about stuff. And it can be a work-related event, so it's okay to talk about work instead of it just being this is an off-hours work event where we don't want to, because there's both, right? There's both. And so I did see, and I don't know which is the right answer of, you know, a startup having the budget for it versus a established organization, because I think that the way the money is spent is just so different in both that, you know, there's arguments for benefits on both sides.
So that's really interesting that you bring up budget when it comes to like getting people together, right? Because I think that's really important is getting people together. You can get better collaboration out of people that at least feel some sort of camaraderie, right? It builds morale, gives you camaraderie, all of those things. Like I think those get-togethers are important. One of the things that I think applies to the situation as well is oftentimes startups have much smaller teams. So while it might seem like they have more budget, they might not actually have more budget, and it more like it's easier to get people together because there are less people. I think especially you get in the like in the upper echelons of like large companies, right, where you have 5-10,000 employees, like it's really difficult to get people together. So oftentimes they do things like smaller like team get togethers where it's just like your individual department or your individual team, which doesn't promote a lot of cross departmental collaboration, but it does still build morale. So I think that's one of the things that you should consider actually, as if it's important to you, right? I am an introvert, so I don't mind smaller get-togethers. I would prefer actually smaller get-togethers. But if you are extroverted and you need that interaction with other people, that face-to-face, that's also something that you should consider. What I've experienced and I've seen experienced at startups a lot is they often do parties that include spouses and children, even like they can do a bit more because they're not having like the teams are smaller, right? So they can really get people together. On the other side of that, though, I think one of the like problem cultures that comes out of that, in my opinion, is that then they start to say that you're a family. And I think that there are issues with that. And it does happen at corporations too. I'm not saying that it doesn't. I think it's just more prevalent in these startup cultures, right? Because you get this kind of feeling where you're all trying to make this thing a success together and we're all taking a risk on this thing. And so you start to get these kind of feelings that you're all in this together, and they promote this family attitude about work. And I think that can be problematic because there's a lot of things and a lot of people, right? You're raised to do things for your family that you wouldn't do for a stranger on the street or even a friend, like necessarily, right? There's this whole culture around family that we have in the world. And I know it's different in different places, but you're more willing to ask for things, for instance, that you wouldn't ask a random colleague for, right? Ask them to do something above and beyond or help you out after hours or whatever. It feels less like a big ask whenever it's someone that you consider family, which says a lot about our culture in general. And maybe that's an American thing, but I feel like it's definitely prevalent in other places as well, where the boundaries are less strict when you consider someone a family member versus, well, that's just a colleague. So I think that those kind of things go hand in hand. They promote that culture even more. Not to say that I did not enjoy all of those parties where my son got to go with me and I took my mom and all of that thing. I loved it. I had a great time. It was super fun. I loved the people that I worked with. I think that there are definitely pros to all of that stuff. I think you just have to keep in mind, and it took me a long time to learn this, you have to establish boundaries and be willing to support yourself in those boundaries.
I think that that's one of the risks, especially for the younger professionals out there jumping into something, is family in the workplace. 100%, Crystal, I couldn't agree more. It has benefits. It's cool. It's nice to be part of a community, but you're still there to work. You're still an employee. You're still a professional. And at the end of the day, if something happens, especially to that startup, you're going to have to move your career on, right? And so you have to be, and I say this, and hopefully folks understand it in the right way, you have to be selfish in the sense that when you have actions and interactions with people, you need to make sure that they are in your best interest professionally, as well as fun, as well as beneficial to, you know, the company culture, right? So it's something that it's that work-life balance, and it blurs the lines a bit more when you have that tighter community, but you do have to still maintain that work-life balance. And it's a more confusing one because it's a more emotionally involved connection than a professional connection. So yeah, it is so cool. And for, especially again, the younger folks with less responsibility, or rather more appetite for risk, it can be really cool, but tread carefully that you don't become too immersed in a situation. And make sure that you recognize, even if they're friends, they started as work friends. And at the end of the day, it's still work.
Yeah, I think one of the things to note too about those blurred lines and blurred boundaries is that it can lead to HR problems. Like, especially if, like earlier I mentioned, your HR is outsourced, which means that when you do have a problem, you're either not going to be taken seriously because, oh, they're just friends, you know, they're fighting or whatever, you know, like it's not taken seriously, or, you know, they think that you're being over emotionally involved or whatever. And maybe that's just my experience as a woman, but I have a feeling that it's not just my experience. Like, there's definitely the blurred lines lead to problems, right? People get a little too comfortable around each other. And as you just said, you do have to remember that they're still work friends. Even if you take it outside of work and you go have a beer or whatever, you have to remember that that can go back to work. So keep your boundaries up. Be a little bit selfish in taking care of yourself, right? CYA. Make sure that you're not saying anything that you'd be afraid to come back to an HR conversation.
Yes, that one's so true.
So I'm just going to pivot us a little bit. I think one of the things that we haven't talked about, we talked a little bit about opportunity in a startup that's different than opportunity in a big corporation. And I think one of those places where that's the most prevalent is in upper level positions, right? The requirements are not as strict or stringent. Like if you want to up level into management or in a higher leadership position, oftentimes they can't afford the large salaries for like a CMO or a CFO or a CTO. And so there's a lot of opportunity for you to experience a growth in your career by moving to a startup to be able to say, oh, I was a CTO and maybe it was for a tiny startup and maybe whatever, maybe it was a year or two, but it's enough to get your foot in the door to get a higher level position somewhere else. So that's an opportunity I wanted to talk about because I think it's really interesting, right? You get to experience the position and the title and all of that. You can add it to your resume without having the same like really strict requirements necessarily that you would have somewhere else.
Well, and that plays into what you brought up earlier, the policies aspect of things, because the more established corporations with the more embedded HR and, you know, what happens is despite talent, someone may be restricted, right? It's very, and this happened to me almost 10 years ago that I was kept from being promoted into the position that my manager wanted me to be in and that I felt I should have been in. And it capped me in pay because you can't skip pay grades to a certain level. You can only jump X number of pay grades, which I don't want to disparage any organization who does this, but to the employee, that's incredibly discouraging. And so one of the major benefits to the startup is that those kind of restrictions aren't really there, right? They're desperate for talent, not for adhering to policy. So if they see the right candidate, they'll make it happen from within as well. And so, you know, it's a huge benefit again to the person advancing their career at a rapid pace and looking for the high risk and great opportunity because you have less restriction on just the path. Now, on the contrary, using the term path, something that is a benefit of the organization is oftentimes they will have a more clear career path, right? Something where you can continue to march in a specific direction. And it will help you accelerate your career on that path, right? But it does follow more of those guidelines. But it's something that's clear. And again, based on the different personality of person who's looking at the job startup versus established corporation, someone might say, ooh, I don't like risk, or ooh, you know, that sounds cool, but you know, I'm a little bit more of the follow the guidelines, right? Let me go to icyveins.com and just say, show me the build and I'll plug in the talents. I'll plug in the skills. That's a game joke for folks who aren't aware. Just following the guidelines though, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. They're just two different ways to approach job levels.
Yeah. And I think that the interesting thing too is, as well as it being kind of easier to step into a higher level position, there's two things that go hand in hand with this like sort of job level discussion, which is A, that may mean you have more responsibilities than you otherwise would have in that position. And B, something that I've noticed as well is oftentimes because there's not established policies, that may also mean that there are no performance reviews. And while people can groan and complain every time it comes time to do their performance reviews and it's such a pain and, you know, whatever, there's all those downsides to doing performance reviews, that also makes it easier for your manager to give you acknowledgement and give you a pay raise and give you even a job position level, right? If you're moving to you need those performance reviews for those things to happen. And I definitely worked somewhere that didn't have performance reviews for the first 2 years I worked there. And let me tell you, that was incredibly frustrating. So you have to balance that out as well. If you are, I'm also the reason why that was established. I, you know, you have to be willing to shake it up a bit, or to point out the fact that you don't have those established policies, and it may not happen right away either. Like, you, maybe they haven't figured out how to do that because they've outsourced their HR. Maybe, you know, whatever the case may be, there are oftentimes reasons behind it, I'm sure, or, you know, they're just so excited for this idea. It's not something that they thought of or whatever, right? Like, I mean, there's any number of reasons why you might not have that in place, but that is something to consider asking about, at least during interview process. You know, what is your performance review process, so that you can have that in your back pocket to know whether or not it's been established and if it's going to happen.
Kind of similar when we're talking about positions, it's not so much about climbing or you know, increase, merit increase, performance, but and this may fit a little bit better in a different subject, but the amount of responsibility you feel in your position, right? Because not all positions at a startup are going to be those higher positions where you're looking to expand, you're doing so much innovation. A lot of times it's just a salesperson, right? And so some of the differences, I mean, in sales, and this is hard to say because sales, your number always matters, right? Because the more you make, the more everyone makes, right? It's that kind of feel. But in a startup, it matters more because there's less of you and you're impacting the company with much bigger stake. Whereas with a larger organization, I don't want to say a salesperson may be a drop of water in the bucket, but they're much less of an impact on the larger organization itself. So the pressure is greater potentially, right? The pressure and maybe the reward too is greater at a startup, but the relief or lack of pressure at the corporation may be something that you're looking for as a benefit. Now, contrary to that part as well is the fact that you have less pressure means you may feel or be less or more rather expendable to the organization. So the larger the corporation, right, the more impactful a reduction in force is. Right. So there's potential that you feel like a part of that family. And so when you're at the startup, you are more of a contribution. It's harder for the organization to let you go, the small organization. Whereas with the larger one, some of those decisions are made so far away from you that you don't have the ability for that connection, that family feel to protect you in any way. Right. So there's just more things to consider or look at as far as how the positions vary in there, right?
Yeah, I have noticed you brought up the sales impact in a startup versus a corporation. I have noticed too that I feel like wins are like more broadly celebrated at a startup as well.
It's a vibrant experience being on the sales floor of a startup organization.
Yeah, it's definitely like a bigger deal when you make a big sale as or if you're part of it in any way. I was going to bring up too, I had a thought that when you're working at a startup, because of the attitude of you wear many hats and they're a bit more agile and flexible in that, it also means that there's more opportunity for cross-departmental like learning opportunities. So if you were like, oh, I don't know, well, I wonder what it would be like to be a front-end dev, then you might have an opportunity to go do that because, as I said earlier, the requirements are often less. And because they promote, often promote that like family feel, there's also this attitude of like, well, if you want to and we have an opportunity for you to, then we will let you. And I feel like that doesn't happen nearly as much in a larger corporation. There's a lot more rigid like structure in place in a large corporation than in a startup because they don't have any of that structure. So like if you want to learn something new, a startup is a great place to do that because there's more flexibility to take on a new position or try a new technology or whatever. There's a little bit more flexibility there.
No, I think flexibility is one of the coolest key parts of it. And yeah, it's definitely got its wins as far as, you know, take the family aspect if it's suitable for where you're at. Maybe if you just started a family of your own, it's not. Right? Because you're looking for more time at home, less time with coworkers and peers so that you can spend it with your family and more stability. So, I mean, everything's going to vary. There's pros and cons to both. But ultimately, I think that both sides should try to adopt the pros of the other, which is why when you had brought up earlier the policies aspect and talking about the agility or the fact that, you know, folks should be able to influence some of the decisions that are made, I think larger corporations are getting better at that, but do need to just continue embracing it rather than, you know, we tried it and we try it seasonally, right? Right. That's, it has to become part of the culture, not just an experiment or experience that happens so often.
Yeah. You can't let it be the pumpkin spice latte of your corporate world.
Oh, that's a good analogy for it. Yeah. It definitely cannot be that.
You know, everyone loves it, but it only comes once a year. You know, it's one of those things that you have to, learn. And I think, not a specific, I guess, to startups, I suppose, but I do want to talk about growing pains and acquisitions. And I think growing pains are less noticeable in a larger corporation than they are in a startup. And the reason for that is because, A, if you're like VC funding backed or whatever, like there are specific goals that they're looking for to get their money back, and things like that, right? Like there, it's a little bit different versus like a larger corporation has like a, you know, if they're publicly traded, they've got a whole board and there's like all these larger discussions that no one ever is part of. And then you have to listen to your stakeholders and there's way more of them and like all of this, right? So there is, it's different, but as you're growing, I worked at the same company for 9 years. So when they were a startup and then when they were definitely no longer a startup. And I think one of the things that is very interesting is the growing pains that you go through, right? When you're newly established in the first like 2 to 5 years, I would say, as you're trying to become like established, successful company. If you stay with the company throughout that time, you'll notice things change a lot, right? The growing pains in natural, like the employees are growing. And so there's more responsibility there. But also, I think that you'll notice too, right? You may not, it goes back to policies and that kind of stuff, right? You have to establish those things as you go. And you don't notice the things that you would notice at a larger corporation until later, where you're like, well, if we would have had this in place. And then you're establishing things kind of after the fact a lot of the times, right? Like now we've had to deal with this thing and now we know we need X policy or whatever. And maybe this is a place where startups could learn from corporations, is to say, you know, like, these are established policies. We should consider something similar for our company to head those things off at the pass, because I feel like it happens a lot, right? It's so fast paced. You're doing so much so fast all the time. And like, as you're growing and becoming more established, if you have retained customers over time, which we hope that you have, they start to have higher expectations of you. They start to spread those expectations to other people. If they're happy with the work that you're doing with them or the software you're selling or whatever, if they're happy with what your company does, then you're hoping that they're spreading the word to people that they know at other places so that you can sell your product or services or whatever to other people, which means other people are having higher expectations of you. And so like those growing pains happen naturally. I just feel like kind of like your sales analogy earlier, in a larger corporation, it's a little bit more of a drop in the bucket. You don't notice it very much. Or like if you work in a non-impacted department, you're not going to know it happened at all. And like even if, you know, we hired a whole new sales department in this country over here, it's like, oh, whatever, it means nothing to me. So like, I don't care. Versus if it happened at a startup, you definitely would notice that they hired a bunch of new salespeople or whatever the case may be, right? Those growing pains are much more noticeable and sometimes can be really difficult to deal with because you don't know how it's going to impact you. Even if it's like not anything to do with your role, it's going to impact you more at a startup than it will at a larger corporation in most cases.
Yeah. And part of the growing pains may be an acquisition, because one of the biggest purposes of some startups, not all startups are doing this, but oftentimes many startups, their whole goal is to make a product in an established market to be acquired, right? So that the creator can make money. And it's not to take away from the folks that participated in the startup. They can continue working with said product, but an acquisition is a part of many, many startups. And so it itself has growing pains. And it's something that if you're considering a startup, you should be ready for. And planning as part of your career path. Are you planning to continue as the product is acquired, or when the acquisition takes place, are you moving to your next startup, right? Obviously, if you're moving to your next startup, you will have already created your own lessons learned path. But when we think about acquisitions, you kind of have to think about the fact that all of your culture will change. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, but all of your policies will change. Your go-to-market strategies will change. Right. So initially, and from personal experience, many things may attempt to stay the same, but that's to kind of ease the acquisition in. And so organizations that do this often should be continuing to develop better and better acquisition activities to make the transition smoother and smoother. But be prepared for that, both as a corporation that's established, if you're the ones acquiring, you know, keep the culture in mind. I think the culture is actually absolutely the most important part of an acquisition from both sides. Be prepared to see your culture change a little. And, you know, on the other side of things, the adopting or acquiring established corporation has to be incredibly considerate of that. Because part of what made said product that you acquired successful was the culture of that startup company, right? And the customers know that. So it's not just the employees that you can replace. Not that I'm saying that's what happens or is ever intended to happen, but the customers have become accustomed to the culture that the folks at that startup brought to them. And so embracing and accepting that that culture is now part of the larger organization, maybe it can spread throughout, or maybe it can still stay somewhat segmented, but the culture is probably the most important thing because policies do change all the time. But culture is something that keeps people happy and keeps people where they want to be.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think something else that I'd like to bring up about acquisitions is that if you are at a startup and you are acquired, one of the things that is really important if you decide to stay with the company after it has been acquired, we could talk about the practicalities of what that entails, which is a lot of work. It is a lot of work to integrate two companies together. But B, I think that the other thing to consider, and this goes to culturally as well, one of the things that you have to come to realize and be okay with and change your mindset about the fact is that when you join a larger corporation, you're no longer the only important thing in that corporation. So one of the things that happens is when you're doing cross-team collaborations after you've been acquired, oftentimes your experience in the past however many years you worked at the startup is that you're the only product, you're the only thing, whatever. And so you think that your priority is the same as other people's priority. And that's just not the case. You'll have to learn to adapt to the larger, you know, say you're a software company, right? And you guys make a piece of software, you get acquired by a larger software corporation. We'll say it's Microsoft. Microsoft has like hundreds of products, right? And they're not just one product, which means that while it's your priority, it's not going to be the same priority for everyone that you work with. And I think that's an important transitional change that is very difficult for a lot of people to come to terms with, especially if they loved working at a startup, right? You only have one or two things that you guys make. That's all your priority is. That's your whole importance. Everyone you work with also knows that. And when you go and you be absorbed by a larger corporation, that's not true. You won't get the same privileges. You won't get the same attention. And you have to be okay with that if you want to stay.
So use one of Crystal's favorite F words, family. You are now part of a family. And so you are but one of many children as far as, you know, the products and whatever organization, you know, that's doing the acquisition. So yeah, you have to, yeah, that's 100% true, is you have to realize that investment from the organization is now shared with you, not for just you. So it's a big deal for folks moving from a startup via acquisition into that next role. So just more things to consider. And what could happen is, and I don't want it to make it sound like acquisitions are a bad thing. They don't have to be, absolutely not. Because it's also potentially almost like a career natural progression for you if you started at the startup, right? Maybe you did rise fairly rapidly, but you're starting to notice in your startup that you're hitting somewhat of a glass ceiling. Then you become acquired. Now you have an established corporation with very, very clear career pathing and policies so that you can continue. You found your niche role, you can continue on a path, right? So this can be a great thing for you that you're now able to say, wow, I got a really great ramping start at this startup company. And fortunately for me, I was part of an acquisition and I can continue my path now, right? I've got clear guidelines and a company with an established budget and resources to help me along this journey. So there's pros to literally all that we've talked about, as well as cons to the same. So, and that's exactly what this topic was supposed to be about. So what are the benefits?
you have to decide for yourself, because they're like you said, there's pros and cons to both. I think one last thing I wanted to mention is if you are part of an acquisition where the company was bought, and even if they do a labor force reduction, oftentimes if you have been established at that company for a significant amount of time or you're at a certain level, there might be monetary benefits for you in that segment as well. So like if you're working for a startup and you've worked there the whole time it's existed, there's oftentimes when they get purchased or whatever, you can get a nice package, a severance package or something out of it. Like, so don't necessarily discount it, even if they do reduce the workforce, which is obviously a negative, or you decide to leave, which may not come with any monetary benefit. That's for you to negotiate. But I think that there are monetary benefits to that as well, right? Like we're going to reduce the workforce, but you are a CTO and we know that you worked hard to make this what it is, whatever. We're going to let you go with these benefits. There's definitely a thing that happens fairly regularly. People just don't talk about it.
Yeah, there's a chance you might be able to put a down payment on a new home if your organization gets acquired. So great point.
Yeah. Which obviously doesn't happen for everyone, but it is something to consider.
It's something I've seen. So again, risk, a fun, exciting potential risk with a startup company.
Yeah, I think the only thing that we haven't touched on that I want to cover is education in these two different spheres. Well, we talked a little bit about like opportunities for like learning different roles and stuff like that, but I want to speak about like more formalized versions of education, certifications, courses, even going to events, and how that is different at startups versus corporations. Typically, corporations that are established have budgets set aside specifically for continued education of their employees, which means that while you have to go through an approval process, you know, to get these things, and maybe you're getting a certification and you have to make reasons, give them the reasons why this would be good for them and you. If you can get them to pay for that, and that includes going back to college and all kinds of things, there's a lot. Corporations oftentimes have established programs for these purposes, and that means that they have money set aside for that. And oftentimes startups don't. They might be willing to pay for it because they are, like we said earlier, agile and flexible. And so if you can prove to them that this is going to be beneficial for the company as a whole or whatever, you may be able to convince them that it's worth their while. But oftentimes they don't have college programs set up. Like they're not going to be paying for anybody to go back to school and get a degree, but they might be able to pay for someone to go to an event or get a certification, you know, do a boot camp or something, because they're lower costs.
When, you know, you mentioned venture capitalist investments, they're not investing in the employees. And it's not because it's a negative, they've invested in the product. So I think that to your point, events are very common because that's to get exposure for the product or whatever they've invested in. But where you might get lucky, and it is way less often in a startup, I 100% agree, but where you may get lucky from a certification is, let's say you got in through luck with some of your experience or a really good interview to a position, but to make your product credible, you need a certification or someone with some accreditation of some kind. Then I can see a startup saying, yeah, we need to go ahead and get you some training. But Crystal, 100% to your point, a startup's investment isn't for you. And that's just because it's a startup. The whole point of it is it has to become a established product of its own first. So that's where you're right. Established corporations can give you those incentives. And just a quick side note, and Crystal, you can, you know, add feedback to this if you want. If you're part of a established corporation and you think or know that your company may have those benefits for you, please use them. Something that gets under my skin is that organizations will, it's like a rebate. You remember rebates, right? They'll say, oh, if you write and mail this in, we'll give you some money back. People treat these programs like rebates and they're like, I just don't feel like it. But that education is waiting for you and the company said that they will pay for it. Please use those education opportunities that organizations provide. Please. All right, that's my PSA. I just have to say that because if they offer it, I get so frustrated when I see that people don't use it.
Yeah. Well, I did want to throw out there, like, in addition to this, like, there sometimes are strings attached to those offers. So you have to weigh the benefits of whether or not that's worth it. And saying strings attached made me think of RSUs, which is restricted stock units, which is not a benefit you are likely to get at a startup. But if you're at a publicly traded company, corporation, a larger corporation, and you're in a higher level position, often part of your pay structure can be RSUs, restricted stock units, right? And they sometimes give them out as bonuses or whatever. Those do have string attached as well, right? You have to, they own.
It's a stay with me bonus.
It's a stay with me bonus. That's right. That's a great way to put it. So, you know, they vest on certain dates and then you can do with them. So they're future money that they give you instead of money right now.
I think that that's a really cool incentive, because to me, I try to, you know, change my way of thinking and say it's an investment in you. If they do say, hey, here's X number of RSUs, restricted stock units, which for folks who may not be aware is just something that is a stock that you have in your portfolio that isn't technically yours until X number of years. That's just kind of my way of dumbing it down, because I'm not great at this stuff. So that's the way I look at it, at least. Yeah, I'm not a financial expert, but it's really cool because it's the organization saying, hey, look, I'll give you X number of potential money, but it's not technically yours until you've been with us for X amount of time. So it's an investment in you because they want you there, and you should look at it that way because it is a cool benefit.
Yeah, just like the education, right? Like even though they have strings attached, they are investment in the employees versus not, right? Because I think you're right that is the attitude. Even if it feels like it, right? I mean, I've worked at a startup. It feels like it. You're all friends and you talk to your manager and they're like buddies. And that's like this whole attitude that everyone has. And then they can't do anything for you.
Yeah, it's the opposite. As startup employees, you're investing in the startup as well. You're saying, here's my time. I know this is a risk, but the payoff could be great, right? Especially if it goes public and then gets bought. Like that's where I was making the joke. That's not a joke. You might get a house out of it, but like you're investing in the startup versus the organization, the established organization's investing in you.
It's a good point. I like it. I like it a lot. Well, I think that about wraps up what we wanted to talk about for startups versus established corporations. So I think what I'd like to do now is kind of generate some questions that you can ask yourselves and we can ask ourselves next time we're looking for a new position so we can adjust our expectations on our acceptable risks for the rewards, right? So, you know, just some questions that you should ask yourself, like, are you okay with working a lot of overtime? And you know, are you okay with traveling more, right? Because oftentimes in startups, you may be traveling more. And maybe in the position you're taking for a corporation, it involves a lot of travel. That might also happen. You got to ask yourself that.
Something I think that is probably one of the most fundamental questions, because I'm now a family man myself, is what is the level of job security and stability, right? If I were a single man in a little bit younger in my professional career, I think the appetite for a startup sounds so much fun just because I personally am an adventurous person and I like the aspect of the risk. But being part of a family where I'm a sole provider, right, that's a risk that I may not be able to take because I want to make sure that I have established benefits. I can see that I can have this job for X number of years in the future. So what level of job security and stability am I comfortable with?
Yeah, I think that goes right into my next question, which is, are you willing to move? I think that is always a question for a job, but if you are not going to work for a remote first company or a position that is remote, then you will have to consider potentially moving to a new place. And I think that's right in the same lines, right? Like if I am much less willing to move now, I've got a kid and established life and I'm around family and stuff, than I would have been 10 years ago even.
To kind of piggyback off of a lot of what we talked about during this topic, I think an important question is, how does the company approach innovation and change, right? So if you have a big appetite to see a lot of change, a startup may be something that's more in your wheelhouse. If you are just looking to flex your expertise in a certain field with a little bit more consistency, then maybe established corporations are something that's a little bit better for you. So kind of identifying what's going to make you feel your sense of success.
Yeah. Following that, because that sparked a question for me, which is, what are the opportunities for growth? And that includes, you know, career growth, as well as maybe even personal growth, right? Like, because there are a lot of opportunities. It might seem like there's a lot more opportunities at a startup for career growth, maybe, but you could also have a lot of career growth opportunities at a corporation. Like as Sean mentioned earlier, with them having a more established career path, that may be something you'd rather look at versus during your interview. If you have to do an interview at a startup, ask them what the opportunities for growth are, because they should be able to tell you if they've established any policies around that or not.
Just lastly from me here is, keeping the risks that we brought up in the other questions in mind, is it something you believe in? Because again, when we talk about fulfillment, I think that startups represent an opportunity that, you know, if there's not already something out there that fulfills that, right, you could chase it, right? If there's already a product or a company that does what you want, go for it. But a startup gives you an opportunity to see something you didn't know that you were passionate about, or maybe you knew, but it didn't exist yet, right? You were waiting for that startup. So keeping risks in mind, is it something that you believe in? Because chasing that is such a fulfilling experience and maybe worth your time.
My last question, I think, is going to center around if you're an extrovert or an introvert. You need to ask yourself, how important is it to me to work closely with other people? And this is maybe not necessarily startup versus corporation. I think it's a question you need to ask yourself for any job that you're willing to take on. Even if you're exploring two at startups or two at corporations, right? If they have a remote first culture, then as we talked about earlier, they may have established some kind of Teams or Slack or whatever channels where there is camaraderie happening that wouldn't happen necessarily somewhere else. So you need to think about that as part of your goals, right? How important are those big parties to you? How important is it that your family is invited to all these are kind of along the same lines as your family invited to those celebrations and things like that, right? Like you need to think about that as part of it. I know that it may not be as high of a priority, but that, I mean, obviously that's to each their own, right? Your priority may be that you feel like you're part of a larger family. I'm not knocking it. I just think that it can ruin whatever boundaries you have. So that's, you know, to each their own. Well, I think that about wraps up this episode of Tech Pod. Thank you so much for joining me in this kind of a rambly talk about startups versus larger corporations. I think that it's an important topic and important things to consider as you're looking for a new role somewhere. I'm your host, Crystal Taylor, joined by fellow host Sean Sebring. And if you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe and follow for more Tech Pod content. Thanks for tuning in.